Welcome to the 38th Res Ed podcast, produced by Media Snackers with Global Kids. In this podcast, discussion around the virtual world Project Wonderland, and also a 5-minute discussion with the guys from kidscom.com. As ever, we'll open this up with the news from the Global Kids guys.
Hey everyone, this is Amira.
And this is Rick.
And we're coming to you from Global Kids in New York City offices with your ResEd news for the week. First off, ResEd is delighted to be recognized by the American Association of School Libraries as one of the top 25 best websites for teaching and learning.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, hats off to all of you guys, a growing community of over 2,500. Here we are honored with websites like Facebook, Ning, Skype, Twitter, Wikispaces. According to their site, the best websites for teaching and learning honors websites, tools, and resources of exceptional value to inquiry-based teaching and learning as embodied in the American Association of School Librarians Standards for 21st Century Learners. So what does this mean? That these websites foster qualities of innovation, creativity, active participation, and collaboration. They're free, they're user-friendly, and they encourage a community of learners to explore and discover. And that's all that you guys are, and we're so excited. As you guys know, we've only been in beta for the last year. We're going to launch the official site beginning in the fall, and we're just really excited to have such a great recognition this early on. So keep doing all the great work, and we appreciate the wonderful community that we're growing to become.
Yeah, we couldn't have done it without you. another update on a project that we talked about earlier, Y-Reef, a virtual coral reef that was created by the Field Museum that launched, I believe it was at the end of March. We got some recent statistics from Beth Sanchenbacher, who's an educator at the Biosynthesis Diversity Center at the Field Museum. She shares with us some really remarkable figures. They apparently have had over 146,000 visits to the Y-Reef in just their first 4 months of launch.
Wow.
Approximately 23% of all Y-Villians visit the coral reef every single day. They just recently launched a Save the Reef activity where they introduced this environmental damage to the reef and then asked people for all these plans for how they could improve how they're managing their coral reef. And they received 427 reef management plans, of which the top two are 1, make the South Reef a protected marine area, and 2, educate fishermen on fishing methods that won't harm the reef. So clearly they've come with a really interesting model for how to engage young people to care about coral reefs even when they're virtual and then translate that into something that could be a real-world action. So congratulations to the Field Museum.
Yeah, super cool project. And we're going to continue to document that on resed.org. More on data, K0 has updated its virtual world universe chart for Q2 2009. We put all these really lovely looking charts up on resed.org, and you should definitely check them out. Their most recent chart shows a significant increase in the total registered users across all virtual world products. So they're saying that there's been a total number of registered accounts in the virtual worlds totaling 579. That's a lot of zeros. What is that, Rick? 579 million in April, June quarter. And that's an increase of about 37%, 38.6 from the prior quarter when the tally was about 417 million. So a lot of growth and lots to look out for there. That's it for this week's news. If you have anything that you'd like featured on upcoming ResEd podcasts, go ahead and send that over to resedinfo@globalkids.org or post it on the site. We'll make sure to highlight it in an upcoming podcast.
Hello, this is Rick Panganiban of Global Kids, and we are here for a very exciting conversation today with several folks who are involved with a particular virtual world project that you may have heard of, the Sun Microsystems Project Wonderland. So we are joined in this conversation with Nicole Yankelevich, Kevin Roebuck, Warren Schaefer, and Matt Schmidt, who I'll give them all an opportunity to introduce themselves and their particular roles with Project Wonderland. But first, let me turn it over to Kevin and Nicole to give us a brief overview of what this virtual platform is and what it does.
Okay, I'd be happy to do that. This is Nicole Yankelevich, and
I'm the lead for Project Wonderland in Sun Microsystems Laboratories. And Wonderland is 100% Java free open source toolkit for creating immersive virtual worlds. So it's a little bit different from some of the other things that are out there. It's not a virtual world in and of itself, but it's a way for other people to create virtual worlds of all different sorts. We've targeted them, the tools particularly towards business and education collaboration, although you can, of course, do other things with it as well.
Great. And so, Kevin, what is your role at Sun Microsystems in terms of supporting this kind of work?
Yeah, hi, Rick. Thanks. I'm the market development manager for e-learning at Sun. And for those that are familiar with Sun, you know, we're a long-standing member of the education community coming out of Berkeley and Stanford. And we've got an organization of around 300 people dedicated to working in education, both primary and secondary, community colleges, higher ed, and lifelong learning, really all over the world. And so my focus is 100% on using the network for learning and collaboration in education.
Wow. So, Kevin, you would say that this is part of the kind of larger nexus of Sun's interest in e-learning?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many interesting angles for not only, you know, online learning, but now the emergence of this new medium for online learning. So most schools around the world have a course management system or some form of digital library where students, researchers, and faculty can get access to content. But now this sort of new medium is enabling some pretty terrific ways of students getting more engaged in learning and professors finding new ways to teach, like you'll hear from Matt and Warren later today.
Yeah. So if either of you could speak a little bit more about sort of Sun Microsystems' interest in education and how that applies to your technology company, like how is this really fit into your sort of larger strategic plan of how you're trying to grow Sun or trying to expand its reach to different audiences?
Sure. So Sun is a major supplier of network infrastructure and computing infrastructure for both commercial and educational and all sorts of enterprises. And there are a number of important elements to education to Sun. One is the students of today are the decision makers in the future and the technologists of the future. So it's important that we evangelize our engineering philosophies and capabilities to those kids so that they can develop them and bring new ideas and actually new companies to market, just like Sun was created back at Stanford in 1982.
Neat. And Nicole, could you say a little bit more about what your Wonderland team does at Sun?
Yeah, sure. So I mentioned that we're in Sun Labs, so we're in the research part of the organization. So we're not a product group. And we started this project as a result of doing a study of people at Sun who work from home. And for those of you who might be familiar with Sun, we have a high percentage of our workforce that is home-based, so about 11%. And we have a lot of people who just work remotely, either some of the time or at customer sites or they're traveling. And one of the things that we were particularly interested in was informal collaboration. And we saw virtual worlds as a potential for that. But then as we got into it, we started to see all of these other potential uses for virtual worlds and training and so forth. So our team, mainly engineers, we're research engineers and looking at building the toolkit and trying to work with Kevin to find all the different types of applications out there in the education community so that the toolkit can support the kind of virtual world that folks want to do for language learning, simulating physics experiments, all whole range of sort of training and teach distributed teaching.
Right. Wow, that's super exciting. So this is where are you at in terms of the development cycle? I see that we're at a 0.5 phase in this.
Yep.
Version.
So just to give you a sense of the timeline, we started in about 2007, and we were working on. It was started as a demo, really, and there was a lot of interest, and so we kept adding features, and finally we decided in about the middle of 2008 that we really needed to step back because people wanted to do real things with this platform.
Right.
And we have entirely re-architected our system, and we're right now, we're calling the new version 0.5, So the 0.5 really is meant to indicate that it's still not, you know, a product that's still very much under development. And we're coming up to our feature freeze for 0.5 in the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to be spending the rest of the summer debugging, and hopefully for the fall semester for folks who want to do Wonderland projects starting the fall, we'll have something reasonably stable, and that'll be our first end-user-ready version. We're not going to call it 0.5 quite yet. It'll probably take us another few months to really stabilize it and debug it.
Great.
That's where we're headed.
Oh, awesome. So let's launch into some of the educational applications. We've got a couple other participants in this conversation who are already doing some amazing work with this. First, we've got Warren Schaefer at St. Paul College, and he's been coordinating a project called Myrtle. Warren, can you give folks a brief idea of what that is?
Well, we actually have a project at St. Paul College we call Virtual North Star. Mm-hmm. And the URL is www.virtualnorthstar.org. Myrtle is one of eight implementations of Wonderland that we have developed and deployed over the last 14 months or so. Myrtle has its origins in England. Dr. Michael Gartner, collaboratively with Sun, did some research on mixed immersive reality teaching and learning environments. We implemented or have implemented the largest such facility that we know of. And in that implementation, we actually have a camera in the classroom, and we use screen capture technology, let me put it that way, to broadcast into the virtual world what the instructor is doing on his or her machine in the classroom. Students attend that class as avatars, or students can attend a class there as physical students. So we actually mix virtual worlds and physical worlds together. We're excited about it because in Minnesota, we're a relatively low population density state. We offer highly specialized curriculum at our college. And in order to make that available to the citizens of Minnesota statewide, Myrtle gives us a platform that we can do a lot with.
So let me see if I'm understanding. So you've got a camera that's projecting into the virtual world the live video feed of the teacher actually running a class, and
yes,
then people
do.
Are participating as avatars from within that virtual environment.
Yes, we project the virtual world on the rear wall of the classroom. It's approximately 8 feet wide and 16 feet long, the projection. So our avatar students come into a simulated lecture hall, and the instructor looks from the lectern into a physical classroom, but on the rear wall he sees a virtual lecture hall with avatars in attendance.
That's incredible. And so what would you say are some of – it sounds like a lot of balls in the air to keep managing as a professor or as a student trying to participate in this. What would you say are some of the interesting challenges that you've had in implementing this in different classroom settings?
Well, of course, you have a server configuration issue, as you will, with any of these. You have to realize that Wonderland, as Nicole indicated earlier, is a development toolkit for virtual worlds. You essentially build your virtual world using the tools that Sun's made available through open source licensing, and that's what we've done. So there's a challenge in server infrastructure. There's also a challenge in classroom infrastructure since you have to wire the projectors and so forth to make the immersive feeling of the classroom natural to the participants.
So how long do you think that – how long does that take till it starts to feel natural, you think? Is it like a couple of class sessions or within the first hour or so?
Well, I would say within a half an hour of being in the room, you're rather comfortable interacting with an avatar as mm-hmm. if you're talking to an individual in the classroom.
Wow. So what's the student experience like? What are students able to do while they're there as an avatar?
Well, a student, there is a loudspeaker in the room, for example, so the student avatar can raise its hand, and the lecturer can recognize the student. and the student speaks into the classroom as if he's sitting there. Everyone hears his voice, and the instructor can respond to the student. So if you think back to Kevin's comments earlier about learning management systems, they're basically asynchronous, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I publish my readings and lectures, exhibits. My student reads them, does assignments, and sends them in to me at a different point in time. He doesn't have the, or she doesn't have the synchronous exchange that's so key in teaching. So what a Myrtle facility does, which is unique, I think, is allow us to have students participate in a lecture hall, take a lesson synchronously where they can ask questions, be responded to, and what we like to think about it, it's learning in the first person.
Wow! Wow! And how does are you using the document collaboration features, or are you using some of the other?
We use a number of the applications. We use whiteboarding, in-world whiteboarding. We use PDF viewing, which is I think a way of projecting a document in-world, and we have used OpenOffice in-world.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Warren, you mentioned that Myrtle was one of 8 Wonderland initiatives you're doing at St. Paul. Can you highlight one or two of the other interesting ones?
We've had a lot of fun doing Wonderland Worlds for people all over the world. One of them that we've done is for the United Nations Technical Vocational Mission in Bonn, Germany, in which we created a virtual meeting place for people from all over the world to exchange ideas on improving technical education worldwide. We've done another one where we've taken a Second Life implementation and ported it to the Wonderland platform. And you can see this our Second Life implementation and our Wonderland implementation by going to 2 different locations, of course. We've also done one in which the college created a virtual tutoring center. We have a pay-first or pay-forward philosophy in our department for our students. We like to see them do service learning, so we created a virtual tutoring center for high school students in the St. Paul area to come into the world and be tutored in things like English or math by our students serving as tutor avatars, if you will, for students and disadvantaged students in the local area. Those are three off the top of my head. We've done some stuff with the University of Oregon's Center for Advanced Technology and Education. We're right now working on a project with the University of Zurich in Switzerland, which will be a fascinating, really the first quantitative study of the efficacy of 3D immersive environments in supporting advanced education collaboration on an intercultural basis worldwide. It's actually a fascinating study conducted by a psychologist over there. So we've done things like that. We've done a lot of the student projects approach to things. The Wonderland platform gives us a great learning opportunity. We've created 2 degrees around it, a metaverse application developer, a metaverse application designer, which are different skill sets. Designers design immersive 3D worlds, and developers develop Java codes. And we find those to be great motivators for students to learn.
Wow. So it sounds like you guys have just like a wide range of experiences in the different kind of educational applications that you can be using with Wonderland. And, of course, at Global Kids, we get very excited when you say things like service learning and working with disadvantaged high school students, since that cuts to the core of a lot of our interest in virtual worlds.
You should talk to Wes Williams out at New Media High School in Boston. He's trying to do things as well with three-dimensional worlds in the high school setting.
Right. He's trying to put together an immersive education charter school in the Boston area.
Wow. Okay, yeah, definitely send us links to that. I'm sure our ResEd population would be super interested in that. So I think, we should transition over to Matt, who's also working with a very unique population of young people, I should say, using the platform for secondary school students. Matt, why don't you tell folks a little bit about iSocial?
Absolutely. excuse me. Well, I'm the project director at University of Missouri for a project called iSocial, and iSocial is an attempt to, I guess I should say it's an ongoing research and development project. And what we're trying to do with it is to develop a way to deliver social skills instruction at a distance for kids who have autism spectrum disorders. So what we're trying to do is take some of the curricula that have been developed at various centers, particularly one here in Columbia, Missouri, Thompson Center for Neurodevelopmental Disorders and Autism, and to kind of port that face-to-face curriculum into a virtual environment so that we can reach more kids, and we can also reach kids using different modalities other than face-to-face. So, you know, it's great if you live in Columbia and you have access to the Thompson Center, but what happens if you live in more rural areas in Missouri? You know, Missouri is actually a fairly rural state, and we have a lot of population that don't live in the cities, and they don't have access to these kinds of resources. So wouldn't it be great to be able to deliver these types of learning to kids who aren't able to commute into Columbia, let's say? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we looked at things like, okay, how can we deliver this type of instruction at a distance? And the problem is with course management systems or what you see as state-of-the-art as far as web-based technologies, most of these are social, but they're such a diminished social experience. Mm-hmm. And with social skills instruction, you really need to have a very engaging social experience, something that has a high degree of social fidelity. And so Wonderland was just the perfect fit for that, not only because of its bleeding edge features, but also because of the open source nature of the program and the way that the developers work completely out in the open. It's just been a wonderful experience.
Hmm. So you've mentioned that mostly the application is related to being able to serve larger communities of students who are on the autism spectrum who may not be able to get to particular, you know, physical classrooms. Would you say there are other advantages to using platforms like Project Wonderland in contrast to the real-world type classroom?
Well, I think that doing a comparison between the real world and the virtual world, that doesn't get us very far, because obviously the real world and the virtual world are so drastically different. So by stating, you know, that we're trying to deliver this face-to-face instruction in the virtual world, you know, I think that people have a tendency to conflate what we're doing with, oh, we just want to port the real world to the virtual world. And obviously that's not going to work. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to really leverage the affordances of the virtual world to help teach these kids social skills in a way that's different, enhanced, augmented. So we've actually begun what we think may be an entirely new field of human-computer interaction study, which we're calling social orthotics. And these are software tools that we're building into our environment in order to enable students who don't necessarily have the skills or the ability to interact socially in an appropriate way. These are software tools that will help them to be able to interact in a socially appropriate way. So, for instance, let's say we have a kid who has a problem with inhibition and interrupts people a lot. What we've been working on is building a tool that can provide feedback about the interruption behavior and adjust that feedback based on the particular kid's diagnosis and his tendency to interrupt. Or let's say that, you know, in the virtual world, we want to bring in some of the norms of the real world. So let's say adjacency to others, distance from speakers, looking at people whenever they're speaking. And these are all things that we can kind of tie into and help the student to kind of overcome issues that he or she may be having with these kind of social skills problems by informing them of the problems in ways that you just can't do in the real world. I mean, you can't walk around with a computer screen, you know, right next to you that says, you know, you need not to interrupt right now or something like that. Yeah.
So wait, what was the phrase you used? Social orthotics?
That's what we're calling this. Yeah, social orthotics.
Okay, so you heard it here first on ResEd. This is an amazing conversation, and I know I would love to dig in much deeper into all of your projects, but we're actually at our time. But I do want to encourage you to continue this conversation on the ResEd.org site. If there are any other so for folks who are more interested in finding out more or perhaps creating an implementation for their educational setting, where should people be going to? I guess I'll leave that with Nicole or Kevin.
Yeah, the open source site is at projectwonderland.com. Mm-hmm. And again, it's really geared towards developers, people who are creating virtual worlds for others. Keep in mind, it's not quite end user ready yet, but this is a great time to start working on projects. You've already heard about folks who are doing quite a bit, even with the software in the current state. So we'd encourage you to get started and experiment at this stage, thinking about deployment a little bit farther down the road.
Great.
And Rick, on the education side, we're interested in extending kind of the open source model to really all areas of design, development, and deployment of Wonderland for educational transformation. And so we've got an online group on the Ning network called the Sun Immersion Special Interest Group, where we have about 1,000 people in something like 70 countries. And as Nicole and all of us learn very quickly with open source, it's just happening, you know, all over the planet. And so this is a way for people to come together in one place and learn about best practices, enterprise integration, you know, tools, open content and curriculum, and all sorts of things. So we'll encourage people to join because it's free, and we'd welcome their participation.
Excellent. So all the URLs and videos that people have referenced on this conversation, we will post to ResEd.org. But for now, I think we should just thank you, Nicole, Kevin, Warren, and Matt for joining us, and we look forward to continuing this conversation in an asynchronous manner on ResEd.org. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
This is Barry Joseph from Global Kids speaking here with Jory Clark, the CEO of Circle One Network, which specializes in reaching kids and tweens around the globe through its virtual world, kidscom.com. Jory, can you tell us a little bit more about what makes your world tick and one of the things that makes it special, which I understand is the way it tries to connect youth in the online space with things in the world, physical world around them?
Yes, we're very excited. We've been in the space now since 1995, making us one of the longest running kid communities online. And we realized that we needed to get kids off of the computers and into the real world. So we had our first exciting project was with the Field Museum of Chicago, where we brought the museum into our virtual world with a virtual museum. And children learn about animal biodiversity in the Illinois wetlands. And in that process, they also can download a special scavenger hunt booklet, which they can then take into the museum in order to earn extra bonus points as they learn offline and bring it back into online.
And can you say more about why that was important for you as a company to not just work with youth within your virtual world space, but have them leave that space as well?
Yes. We knew that one of the major concerns facing this generation is childhood obesity. And part of that is contributed by the fact that unlike all of us who grew up in an older generation where we came home from school and we ran outside and jumped trees and hedges and threw apples at each other, these neighborhoods aren't always safe for kids these days. So they're taking those same play patterns and behaviors and they're now doing it in a virtual world. So we knew that we needed to get adults involved with them, parents and teachers and librarians, and put them in public safe places where they could move around and actually get active.
So is kidscom.com a space exclusively for young people, or is there a place for adults as well who care about young people and their learning?
Well, since 1995, we've always tried to get kids to bring parents to see what they're doing online. Now we're actually taking that to the next level. We offer a green spot program for librarians, for example, where as part of our gameplay, kids have to get off the computer and find a fact within a library. So a library can notify us to be part of the program. We send them emails telling them what's coming up, and we also send them tangible reward cards to make it even more exciting for kids to participate in this offline experience. We're now actually rolling out a third planet in our Idea Seeker universe, which is going to be specifically targeted towards parents, teachers, and librarians. And here we'll be helping them understand what the virtual world and the play experiences can do for digital learning. And so we're very excited to invite those people in to game and learn what it's like and share information together.
Can you give some examples of the type of things that you think parents and educators will learn looking at the material about what virtual worlds can afford young people in their education?
Well, we heard from a lot of adults that they didn't understand, they can't keep up with their first life, so why would they want a second life? And what they don't understand is that the very things that make us human, reaching out to each other, skill building, showing off what we've accomplished in life, those are behaviors that captivate children and youth in these virtual worlds. So by getting them to engage with each other and understand what it's like to communicate, it can be a very, they can all of a sudden understand what makes it so attractive to the rest of the generations.
Jory Clark, thank you for joining and speaking to the Res Ed community today.
I am pleased to do it. I think it's a great community, and I hope we get more people involved.
And here are all the events for your Education in Virtual Worlds calendar. First up is the much venerated Second Life Community Convention that is happening from August 13 to 16 at the Westin St. Francis in San Francisco. For those who don't know, SLCC is an opportunity for all interests to have fun and learn about many of the activities that are happening in this virtual world. There is a whole education track, I believe, that is actually happening. I know there were some questions about whether that was happening. It definitely is happening. So if you are an educator and interested in Second Life in particular, that's the place to be.
Also, September 2nd through 4th at the University of Arts in London is a Designs on E-Learning 2009. They had this back in 2005. It was a great success. And it aims to cast light on established practice in the field on innovations in teaching and learning with technology and on the challenges and successes presented by the virtual nature of these different disciplines. And it gets really into kind of the benefits of online and blended learning. More information, including the details on their call for papers, is available at designs1learning.net, or you can just much more easily go to resed.org, where we have all the information there as well. That's it for this week's events. As always, feel free to post your events in your community up on the resed.org events calendar or send them to resedinfo@globalkids.org, and we'll make sure to feature them in our upcoming podcasts.
Hope you guys are having a fantastic summer. Take care. This is Rick. Bye.
Bye.
All the links referenced in this podcast, as well as the full transcripts, will be available on the show notes at resed.org.